619 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Networks.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand, Everybody.
Live off the record with Chivago Lang is sponsored by Burger King, RF Bank and Trust, World Star Assurance, and New Life.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Chivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful Thursday afternoon, the day before Labor Day. So let me wish you a happy upcoming Labor Day. Trust you enjoy your holiday as we celebrate laborers, workers in the country and in many, many parts of the world. If you want to give us a call today, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316. Or 325-4259, 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. If you like my mother, you can catch us live on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 or on BTC Flow Channel 612. That's BTC Flow Channel 612. So I wanted to spend some time today talking about labor, but more so from the perspective of the profiling of our labor force and also about the future of labor. It's going to happen. Where is it going to go? And to touch on some things I hear people say that I just think we need to think through a little bit more carefully when we talk about them having to do with labor. So if you want to give us a call at all, please feel free to share your thoughts, ask any questions. We're happy to entertain it. I have a lot. I want to mention something before I go on. I'm noticing this subtle debate about what the percentage of the workforce, what the total number of people in the Bahamas, not in the workforce, in the country, in the population, have to be in order to get achieve herd immunity, needed to be vaccinated and or acquire immunity by way of having had the COVID-19 disease. And so the Minister of Health, the Honorable Wentworth Wells, said it's 120,000. He admitted, conceded, this and that's my number. And so, you know, based on some discussions I've had with health professionals, that's what he said. And immediately when I heard it, I questioned it because the percentages that are ordinarily talked about in health circles would not have matched that 120,000. Dr. Sands, Dwayne Sands, former Minister of Health, was interviewed and indicated that we're talking about 240,000 persons or thereabouts that need to achieve immunity either through vaccination and or having acquired it by way of having the disease to begin with. So there's a huge difference there. There's a 120,000 gap there between the minister current and the minister former. What I find intriguing about all of this is this, and I hope it's a lesson. I really hope it's a lesson. Because when you are in public life, you're going to get, especially if you're a politician in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, especially if you're a cabinet minister in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, you're always going to get a microphone shoved in your face. Right? Maybe not shoved, but you're going to have a microphone presented to you because people are going to want to get information from you. it's an awesome responsibility. It really is. Because each time you speak, you do a number of things. Each time you speak, you inform or you misinform. Each time you speak, you may guide or direct or misguide or misdirect. Each time you speak, you represent your administration. In particular, you represent your ministry. Each time you say something, you have an audience that is wide, not just a local audience, but also the international community, because your soundings are echoed, and these days, widely through both the traditional media and non-traditional ones like the social media platforms and those. And so there is an awesome responsibility that rests on you by way of your position. Now, here's what is true. You have a marvelous, marvelous opportunity always to advance the cause of the country, advance the cause of your administration, and in a narrower sense, advance the cause of even your party by virtue of how you represent your thoughts, ideas, and the policies and practices of your administration, ministry, or party, right? And so you always have that opportunity, as well as you always have the opportunity to damage either one of them or all of them at the same time. For this reason, it is really necessary to respect the mic. And what do I mean by respect the mic? I mean to think to the mic, you are such a powerful transmitter of notions. Let's put it like that. And you have the ability to take what I'm about to say all over the place and to have it enshrined in history in perpetuity, because it can be in print, it can be in recordings, and so forth and so forth. On the basis of that, I have to so respect you, Mike, that when I speak, by and large, unless it is absolutely necessary in the circumstances, and there are few circumstances in which it becomes necessary when you are a cabinet minister, unless it is absolutely necessary, what I am going to give you are verifiable facts or the best representation of the facts that I can give. If you are a minister, as an example, you have the full body of the technical and professional people in your domain to guide you, to inform you, to enrich you. You don't have to rest on your opinion at all. You don't. If you have an opinion that's not supported by any evidence or supported by professional backing, you can say, you know what, can I get back to you on that? Because your words have weight. And so what the lesson is, I'm saying, it isn't even necessary for the minister to be embroiled in a dispute over the herd immunity issue as to the count, because he has professionals. He has Dr. Dowd. He has his director of public health. He has all these folks. That one of two things could happen. He said, can I direct you to them to get that number? Or can I get back to you after I speak with our professionals and be able to give you that? Because we have to so respect the audience that the mic is communicating with. But first, the media personnel who provide posing the questions, and then the Bahamian public, to whom they will publish your answers. Because then you get to be able to be one of those persons that the community says, I can more often than not rely on what the minister, member of parliament, et cetera, says, because they tend to speak with supportive information. And that's all. That's the lesson. That's the lesson. I know the temptation to always want to say something. I know that I've been in that spot, but you don't have to. You don't. It's okay. I've been on shows when I was a cabinet minister, and had hosts try to berate me when I said, well, you know, I don't know. Can I get back to you on that? I don't care. Berate me if you want. I don't know everything. I'm a policy directorate. I have technical professionals with much better information than me, and I may not be in command of that information right now, but I can get it. And so that I think it's a lesson. So that it isn't necessary. These kinds of little disputes are totally unnecessary to have. Anyway, there you go. Labor Day tomorrow, a celebration that has its roots in the late 1800s when the labor movement nationally and globally pressed for and moved for a reduction in what were regarded as the draconian work conditions faced by workers all around the world, most especially the fact that most people, you know, these days we take it for granted. You go to work, you work 40 hours, you work more, they make you work more than that. They have to pay you overtime. And, you know, we still think sometimes that's too much. But there was a time when the average soul, especially during the Industrial Revolution, was working 80 to 100 hours a week. I want you to think about that now. 80 to 100 hours means if you work an 8 hour a day week, 5 days a week, that's 40. 80 is double that. So I want you to determine, find in your week where you would and could work for a person 80 hours. I mean, you got to work 16 hour shifts for 5 days. Or some combination that adds up to 80 to 100 hours. That meant that basically you had very little time to sleep, very little time to socialize, very little time to recreate. These things didn't happen. The evolution of the reduced work hours didn't happen by accident. Didn't happen overnight. Didn't happen without agitation. Did not happen without advocacy. You know who did it? I'm seeing labor union people who you discuss and carry on. And you get the benefit from it. And it's so far removed from when it was achieved that you and I can just don't care anymore because it's our life now. But that's the celebration of the greater dignity of work, the greater respect and regard shown to workers by way of respecting their rights, by way of providing them with dignified humanitarian terms of work, like the 40-hour work week, which some people still believe should be reduced, like better pay or equal pay, or you know, occupational health support and all these kinds of things that people advocate and agitate for, most particularly unions as they represent workers. And so I have long been a person supportive of labor, labor unions. I remember having conversations with family members who had their beefs with labor unions, not appreciating to any extent their helpfulness. And I tried my very best to help them understand why you need a union. And I told them, you know, even if a union ain't doing nothing for you right now, let me tell you what is true. What is true is that it's better for you to have a union and not need one than to need a union and not have one. The road and the toil would be much harder if you need a union and don't have one, right? I don't believe everybody has to unionize. I think that there are some workplaces where the conditions of work are so well delivered that people find no need for a organized way of agitating. That's their right. So I don't believe in these folks who believe you have to be in a union either. I don't believe in that either. I think if there's a union available, I think you should give them due consideration in terms of your participation. If you decide as a group in your workplace you don't need to be unionized, I think that that's fine, okay, too, especially because that more often than not reflects that your workplace has a culture that is supportive of workers and you don't need and feel the need to have any additional means of protecting or advancing your rights. And so that's fine as well. No problem with it at all. And so for well over 100 years, 200 years, there has been around the world, not in every place, not every country celebrates Labor Day, but most do. Some don't call it Labor Day. Some call it International Workers' Day or something of that nature. But there is in most countries a recognition, a day recognizing, celebrating our workers. And the extent to which workers are manifestly important to an economy and to a country is unquestionable. Okay? You go physically look around you, wherever you are right now. I want you to just physically look around you. Look at the buildings. Look at the foundations. Look at the walls, the windows, the doors. Look at the roof and so forth. Look outside. Look at the cars. Look at the motorcycles. Look at the bicycles. Look at the food, the clothing. Look at all these things. And you can bet your bottom dollar that more often than not, workers are behind the creation and delivery of those things. I mean, the what you see in our world, what you see around you, is the manifest effort of workers. There's no question about it. So it isn't only that workers put energy and effort into producing those things, you know. That's not the only thing. What they represent in many instances is that worker with dignity and pride and a sense of personness doing all of that. Yes, in pursuit of a pay, but it all works together to create and develop so much that we see positively in our world. Now, while I say that, I have to say, I heard something just today on one of the shows in which somebody says that these, and they always go to foreigners. I mean, let me don't get distracted. These foreigners come here and they get their profits on the backs of the workers. I have to tell you, that is such an ignorant statement. It is ignorant. It shows a lack of knowing. That's what I mean. Don't get offended, don't get upset. I could use another word, but I want to use that strong word. It's an ignorant statement. They get their profits on the backs of foreigners. Now, so let me ask you a question. Your landscaping is done many times in the Bahamas by non-Bahamians, many times by Haitian workers. No, let's be clean about it. Sometimes your whole house constructed by a Haitian worker. You go in restaurants, and even if you go to many account stands now, Haitian workers. Do you ever say, Jesus, they making this count salad on the backs of workers. They cutting this grass on the backs of workers. That I am me. I'm cutting this grass on the back. Do you ever say that? No, you don't. You don't say it because you think to yourself, I must be the most ignorant person in the world to be saying such a thing. You and the worker have an agreement. You do this for me, I will pay you. That's the agreement. As an adult, that's the agreement. Whether you're foreign or Bahamian or Jamaican or don't matter. If you're a foreign owner or Bahamian owner, it doesn't matter. You have an agreement. You signed the agreement. You accepted the job to work for X amount. Because the man said, this is my job. I'm trying to make some money. You knew that. You knew that when you went on the job. And he's in the business of making profits. Like the grocery store man, like the barber. You think your barber is working so he can take no money home above beyond what he spends? Absolutely not. And so it's unsensible to try and put this you against us scenario in which you suggest they are making their profits on the backs of. Well, guess what? A workplace, a business needs backs and it needs brains. You want me to say it clearly, more clearly? A workplace needs backs and it needs brains. And if you don't have brains, you don't even get the workplace to have the backs to work. And if you don't have bots to work, the brains may have a challenge getting to advance what they want, except when I talk to you later on about how automation may change some of that. It's a partnership. It's a relationship between adult people. And yes, in some instances, it is exploitive, where the owners are not duly respectful of workers, and so they exploit. It is also true that there are circumstances in which workers are not respectful of owners and thief from or deprive or give limited service to the workplace. That happens as well. So if the owner of the business say, these people sit, they feeding their family on the backs of my dollar I invested, you would say to yourself, that stupid man is crazy as hell. Then what could it mean you are doing it on the backs of workers? It's absolutely untrue. It's nonsense. Sometimes when I hear some of people speak that way, I say, they are indirectly insulting many workers. Because thousands and thousands of workers in the Bahamas spend decades on a job, decades working for these hotels, working for these banks, foreign and Bahamian banks, working for these restaurants. And you are saying these idiotic slaves spend all that time having people make profits on their backs. You know why? Because they can't do no better. They don't know no better. That's what you're saying by such an ignorant statement. These people live a life through that means where they've been flying up and down all over the world. They're taking care of their kids, educating their kids, even up to university, etc. All on that job. And you have the guts to say that them poor people, their backs been ridden all these years by these profit-making folk. Let me tell you something. The foreigner comes here to make profits, and guess what? The Bahamian business people right here too, all they're trying to do is make a profit. You better believe that. Even the paper people, the people who sell newspapers, what you think they're doing on the streets there? They're trying to make a profit, and I don't blame them. They're sensible people. I don't know anybody going into business and say, child, please, I can keep it low. I can keep it low because I ain't interested in making no profit. No, man, we have to stop this. We have to elevate our intellectual discourse on these matters and stop resorting to this us against them scenario. You can make points about exploitiveness in the environment in which you work without saying things that absolutely reflect a level of misunderstanding or poor understanding or no understanding that only deteriorates our ability to find solutions to the challenges that we face. I think workers ought to be celebrated and employers ought to be celebrated. There's no Employers Day, and I don't advocate for one. I'm not necessarily, I'm not advocating for it. All I'm saying is it is foolish to think that a worker could have work without the capitalist. How does that work? So even if a worker is self-employed, guess what? The only difference is the capitalist and the worker are one and the same. So the worker works for himself. Still have capital, and still have worker. And I guess what? When the worker works for himself, tries to pay himself as much as possible. And if he have other people who work for him, try to pay them as little as possible so he can get paid as much as possible. Let's not be naive. Let's try to think reasonably about these issues. So let's celebrate workers. We should celebrate workers. So love Labor Day. Love it. Love that workers have an opportunity to have emphasis and focus on them and their needs. It's very important. We have some text, yeah. This text is, Mr. Lang, I've heard the Minister of Health's response to the question about herd immunity. And he did say he consulted with professionals before he put forth that number on air. No, actually he did not. he didn't say he consulted with health professionals. He said that this is my, he said, I'm not saying this is my, I don't know if the producer have it, he can play it for you. This is my thought. He said, I did talk to some health people I speak to, but what my point is, health people, listen, Dr. Dahl Regis is right there. Your director is right there. All kinds of people. Nuh-uh. So don't try that. So we need to ask the question, with whom did he have a discussion which caused to produce the number? Well, I don't think anybody would want to give him that number today. I mean, he wouldn't want to give them that name today, because I don't know anyone who would suggest that that level, that number, would produce herd immunity. Not anyone that I know. But good luck. If you could find the information, you let us know. It says they definitely shouldn't be speaking to an audience of 1 p.m. Say, don't be too modest, Chief Pontiff. 95% all know it. boy, man, I gotta be modest. Y'all. So it's a great show as usual. 80 hours a week, Mr. Lang. That's abuse. That's slave labor. I could not do it. And I pray to God I never put or find myself in that position to have to work 80 hours. It was very, very, very tough. So it's a great show as usual, Mr. Lang. The person who texts the foreigners making the profit off the back of people. I did not send that text to you from none of my phones. So like Mr. Lang, like Shaggy said, was not me. That person who texted that was not thinking right. I didn't say you sent it. In fact, I didn't say it came from a text. I heard it on a show. I don't recall that it was actually a text. But anyways. Here's what it is. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller. Do I still have a call on the line? Okay. No, looks like not. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shpago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue. We're talking about labor today. Got lots of information to share with you. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together. Storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Your health is important. Don't trust it with just anyone. Welcome to New Life Natural Vegetation Cell Food Limited. We stock an extensive range of health foods, alternative medicines, and organic produce with a wide variety of special dietary foods, herbal teas, and herbal medicines. New Life also carries natural, organic, and environmentally friendly soaps, body lotions, and other skincare products. Stop by our state-of-the-art alkaline deli and try our all-healthy and all-natural tasty choices. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff can answer any questions you may have. We offer on-site consultations on nutrition, diet, and healthy alternatives to disease and ailments. New Life cares about you and your health needs. We're located in the Independence Drive Business Park, East Street South, south of the Independence Roundabout. Visit our website at www.newlife1020.com. Let your food be your medicine.
You work hard. Shouldn't your money be working hard too? RF Mutual Funds are designed to put your money to work with some of the best performing investment funds in the market and a range of funds to suit your unique needs and risk tolerance. So when you're hard at work, you can be confident your money is too. Put your money to work with RF Mutual Funds. Call us at 603-6000 or visit rfgroup.com to learn more. RF, money at work.
The Sour Sourdough King is back at Burger King Nassau. This fan favorite features 2 quarter-pound savory flame-grilled beef patties topped with thick-cut smoked bacon, 4 slices of melted American cheese, ketchup, and creamy mayonnaise, all on toasted sourdough slices. Get your sourdough sandwich as a single or a double and add ice-cold Pepsi and fries or onion rings for a perfect way to fill your day. The flame-grilled Sourdough King is only here for a limited time and only available at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
I marched the car. The lady run into me marched the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Labor Day Eve, and where we're talking about labor today. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316. 325-4259, 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. The Department of Statistics provided its labor force report in 2019 May. I know we all talk about the fact that we haven't had any updated labor numbers for 2020 and so forth. Okay. The department explained why that is. Like most people, the pandemic disrupted life, and apparently there wasn't quite an alternative means to doing it, at least not the one that we utilized. So, you know, I understand the challenge, no problems. But it did release this labor force report. So how many people make up our labor force? According to the Department of Statistics, just shy of 240,000 in 2019. Now, just shy of 240,000. Could not have changed that much since 2019. So it's probably around that number still. Now, that's an increase from, say, 2013 of just shy of 200,000. So we're looking at approximately 50,000 or 40,000 or thereabouts having been added to the labor force since 2013. So in 6 years, that's what it looks like, you have had that addition to the labor force. Now, let me tell you, there's a difference between the labor force and the workforce, right? You have your population. Your population consists of all your people. That's your manpower, okay? So if we say the population is about 389,000, that's the manpower in the country, okay? But not all that manpower is a part of the labor force, because the labor force consists of all the eligible bodies that you have who can work and are willing to work. Okay, those who can work and who are willing to work. So you can't be a part of the labor force if you ain't willing to work. And you could not be willing to work because you could be retired and decided, I ain't working no more. That's fine, right? Or you could just decide, I ain't working anyhow, period. So you wouldn't be part of the labor force because we can't call on you because you ain't willing to work. So that's the labor force, those who are eligible and able and willing to work. The workforce consists of the people who are ordinarily employed, okay? So the difference between your labor force and your workforce is your unemployed. Okay? So you're unemployed. That's the difference. Even your discouraged workers are not counted in the unemployed numbers, even though they, you know, they are counted, but they're not counted in your unemployed. Because why? When the Department of Statistics comes to you and they say to you, are you working? You say no. And they say, have you been looking for work within the last 3 months? And you say yes, you're counted in the unemployment number. If you say no, you are not counted. So not working and being unemployed ain't the same thing from the Department of Statistics point of view. Because if you stop working, if you stop looking for work within the last 3 months, they count you as a discouraged worker, meaning you find that the opportunity to work is so limited, you stop looking, you are no longer unemployed, because an unemployed person, somebody who's actively looking for work, you are a discouraged worker. So people who think, okay, yeah, well, the unemployment numbers are understated because you don't count the people who are discouraged. Well, that's easy. That's easy to do, because they give you the unemployment numbers and then they give you the discouraged workers numbers. And so you can put the two together yourself. So it's not like anybody's trying to hide anything. But the fact of the matter is, if you ain't looking for work, you ain't unemployed. You cruising or whatever else it is, right? Or you're retired. So we have about roughly 240,000 people in our labor force. And if you could calculate, if I could calculate the maximum amount of energy that each of those person can produce in a day, then I can know what the maximum potential energy output, human energy output is in any given day or year for the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, because that represents what we can produce with. That's it. That's all we got. We got time, we got energy. And so the collective energies of all the people in our labor force is what we have to work with. So that's like if I tell you we have 240,000 batteries, and each of those batteries could produce this amount of energy, this number of joules of energy, then you'll tell me that is the total power potential of those collective batteries. Well, that's what is true about the labor force. That per man hour, they represent what we could do, what we could lift, what we could move, what we could cut, what we could straighten up, what we can serve. That's what that represents. That's all the country has to work with. And so the extent of our potential productivity is the extent of that workforce. Now, all the people in that labor force, their energy ain't the same, because some of those people are sick. Some of them have issues that doesn't allow their energy to be optimized or maximized. Some of them are malnourished, perhaps. So you have to take account of those things, because that's one of the reasons why people in economies count sick days and lost man hours due to various kinds of things, because they're trying to get a sense of how the labor force is performing relative to its potential. So what's the number of people we have in the labor force? 240,000. That's it. They're the workers. What's the participation rate? Labor force participation rate in 2019, it was 83.1%. It was down compared to 85.9% in 2019. Okay? And so when it comes to men and women, the participation rate of men, it was higher in 2019. Sorry, let me fix that. 2019, the total labor force participation rate was 85.9%. 85.9%. That was essentially the same as it was in 2018. So for the 2 years, the participation rate was the same. okay? men participated to the tune of 82.9% compared to women, 76.8%. Why is that important? That's important because if we have men and women participating at different rates, it means that we are not maximizing our potential in the economy. That's reality. What we want is we want, is where possible, we want 100% participation rate by both. But if you have one gender or the other not participating as much as they could, then you are losing potential productivity in your economy. And it seems like for consecutive years, compared to, according to the Department of Statistics report, the women have been, they had a lesser participation rate than the men, okay? Now, when we look at the unemployment rate in the country over 6 years or so, from 2013 to 2019, according to the Department of Statistics, let me shock you by saying something to you that you may intuitively not believe, but these numbers, they have, the trend shows it, that the unemployment rate in the country has been going down, trending downward from 2013. From 2013. In 2013, it was at the, of the order of 16%. Okay, by 2019, it was just below 10%, like 9.7% or thereabouts. And it has been trending that way for those 6 years. Now, there have been periods when they might have gone up or down, but they have been trending down. And this is true for the entire labor force, and it is true for both genders. So both, so the unemployment rate for men have been going down. The unemployment rate for women have been going down. And the unemployment for women have been consistently higher than the unemployment for men, again, meaning that we're not maximizing the potential of our economy because the women aren't participating as the, at the rate that they we would like them to participate. There was a convergence of this participation on the part of women and men in 2018 when both had unemployment rates of about 10%, down from 10.5% or thereabouts the year before. And then, you know, down from 14% in 2013. So if you look at the trend over 6 years, the unemployment rate was actually headed in the right direction over the years. And then we had COVID in 2020. I want you to see consistency in relation to the impact that of the employment situation with respect to women versus men, but also notice that both genders trend in the same direction insofar as the employment experience is concerned. The Department of Statistics report also has what we call the Lorenz curve, from which we calculate what we call the Gini coefficient. And you don't have to worry about all that. What it essentially tells us is how much the income distribution in your country is equal. How much it's equal. If the income in distribution in your country was totally equal, meaning that each portion of the population gets equal portion of the income. So if you had equal distribution of income, 20% of your population would get 20% of the income, 40% would get 40%, 60% would get 60%, 80% would get 80%, 100% would get 100%. That's when it's absolutely equal. But when it's not equal, that means that one portion of the population is getting a bigger share. So if you have the lower the Gini coefficient is what we call it, that this number, the lower that is from one, the more unequal is your income distribution, meaning a smaller percentage of your population gets a larger share of the income. Well, the Bahamas had the most equal situation, meaning that its Gini coefficient was nearest to one in 1996, since independence. Sorry, in 1999, since independence, the closest we have been to a equal distribution was in 1973, when the year we got independence, it was the furthest away. And we have not been closer since 1999. We have been drifting closer to 1973 over the years, and the worst we were, it was in 1986. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabar Lang, your host. When we come back, we'll continue talking about labor on this in the this eve of Labor Day. We'll be back after the news break.
Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
You work hard. Shouldn't your money be working hard too? RF Mutual Funds are designed to put your money to work with some of the best performing investment funds in the market and a range of funds to suit your unique needs and risk tolerance. So when you're hard at work, you can be confident your money is too. Put your money to work with RF Mutual Funds. Call us at 603-6000. Or visit rfgroup.com to learn more. RF, money at work.
The Sourdough King is back at Burger King Nassau. This fan favorite features 2 quarter-pound savory flame-grilled beef patties topped with thick-cut smoked bacon, 4 slices of melted American cheese, ketchup, and creamy mayonnaise, all on toasted sourdough slices. Get your sourdough sandwich as a single or a double and add ice-cold Pepsi and fries or onion rings for a perfect way to fill your day. The flame-grilled Sourdough King is only here for a limited time and only available at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Chad, Johnny Moe's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pulled my phone out, pulled up the Royal Star Insurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep, sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of...
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. We're so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon, the eve of Labor Day. And we are talking about labor in the Bahamas in celebration of Labor Day tomorrow. If you want to call us, please give us a call at 323-6232 or 325-4316. Or 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We have a few texts. Yes, says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. It is rather difficult to put a figure on what numbers are required to achieve herd immunity. He may or may not be correct, because the CDC said that for every person that is tested positive for COVID, there is up to 10 people who may be infected or don't even no. Well, I don't think it's difficult to, I understand the point you're making, but I don't think it's difficult to put a number on it. The fact of the matter is the scientific community has put a number on it. They put a percentage on it, right? Sometimes it ranges from 60%, even up to 80%, depending on it. But it is possible to put a number. What you're saying is it's impossible for him, or it may be impossible for us to put a number because we don't know how many people have been affected. But you are missing the point of what I was saying to begin with. I'm not arguing whether he is right or wrong. And this is part of the challenge we have sometimes. It's not a rightness or wrongness. I'm saying if you're a minister, there is a way to shield yourself against these kinds of situations in which you are challenged on the basis of your information, because you can either speak as per what your official professional community tell you, or you can let them say it. That's all I'm saying. Okay. So I'm not here about whether he's right or wrong or not right or wrong, because here's your problem. You're right now saying he could be right, which means there's a debate. Well, but you don't even have to have the debate, is the point that I made. This text says, Mr. Lang, you're right about workers exploiting business owners. When I worked in the hotel industry, I can recall employees stuffing steaks, lobsters, and other food items on their persons when they were caught by security with all the evidence. The unions still demanded the hotel to keep them employed. P.S. I now work in the financial sector and I've been for 33 years. I am so soon to retire and has a beautiful future because of my employer. There you go. I totally understand what you make. We have some other text here. This text says, is a motorcade in breach of the ever-changing and evolving emergency orders? That's a good question. I don't think so. I don't know of any prohibitions against motorcades, but I could be totally wrong. I just may be ignorant of that fact. This text says, Mr. Lang, I think they need to seriously review and revise the Labor Act, because how come no one march on the fact that if you work for a company for 20, 30 years and you get fired, they only pay you up to 12 years. That means every 13 years, a person needs to find a new job. No, that's not what it means. It just means that the minimum standard required by law is the 12 years consideration, right? That's the minimum standard. A workplace could do better than that. It could do more than that. But here you are, again, I'm saying, you are saying that those people who decide to work for a place 20, 30 years, you're silly. Why would you do that to yourself? But that's what they want to do. Come on, man. That's what they want to do. Like you, they're human beings making choices about their lives. And they're content and happy. The lady just said, the texter just said they've been on the job for 30-something years. And they happily getting ready to retire because of their employer. Come on, man. Okay, you know, people who are exploited when they say they exploited, you know, not because you say so, not because I say so. Or sometimes they could be exploited, no, that's true, but that's not often the case, unless people are really unable to do so. They tend to be in very difficult and impoverished circumstances. All right, so we're looking at the labor numbers as provided by Department of Statistics. So I want to just give you a few more before I go on to another point to do with labor. Do you know what the educational qualifications of your workers are, according to the Department of Statistics? Like how many of them have degrees, how many of them have O levels or BGCSEs or BJCs or none? Do you know that at all? Okay, well, let me tell you. According to the Department of Statistics 2019 labor force report, 22% of your labor force, let me give you what that is, what that represents in terms of numbers, 22%, that's 22% of 240,000, that's 52,800 or so workers, people in your labor force have no education. And by that, they mean formal, I suppose, education reflected by BGCSEs, Pittman, RSAs, et cetera, and so forth and so forth. No, none of those qualifications. So 22%, about 53,000. How many have BJCs, Pittman, RSA, et cetera? 16%. 16% have that amount. So that's approximately 38,000 people. How many of them have only GCEO level BGCSE? 30%. So that's 30% has just a GCE or BGCSE, and that's about 72,000. So non-degreed persons in your work, your labor force, is the percentage of them is 68%. 68% are non-degreed. Okay, I'm not casting a judgment on whether that's good or bad. I'm just giving you what the numbers are. That's about 163,000 persons. How many people have degrees or professional qualifications or thereabouts? The number is about 10% or thereabouts. All right, about 10%. So that's about 24,000 or so, according to the Department of Statistics. Okay, if you have a chance, you can get this online. You can get this report online. It can be extremely helpful because it can tell you how many people have educational attainment and by sex up to certain things. So here is the number of persons with no schooling or no schooling at all, including primary school. Or no schooling or just primary school, the number is about 15,000 or thereabouts. And more of them are men than women. No schooling or just primary school. Those who didn't complete secondary school, those who didn't complete high school, is about 18,000 or thereabouts. Most of them are men, didn't complete high school. Completed secondary school, about 138,000 or thereabout, and most of them who completed secondary school are men, not women. Most of them are men who completed secondary. Completed university, about 54,000 completed university. Most of them are women. Most of them are women, right? Completed some other tertiary institution, about 21,000 or thereabout, and most of them are men. That's according to the Department of Statistics, okay? All right, so let me just venture into something else. There's lots of more information in that report that you could look at and get a sense of your labor force. They can tell you what percentage of your employed labor force by nationality. So the number of employed person by nationality, 92% are Bahamians, 8% are non-Bahamians, according to the Department of Statistics. You want me to tell you all again? Not what you guess, what you think, what you hope, according to the Department of Statistics. 92% of your employed labor force are Bahamians and 8% are non-Bahamians. That is according to the Department of Statistics labor force report. Okay? So there is something happening in our world. In our world, there is someone talking about, you got to have workers and so forth and so forth. I agree with them 100%. But something is happening in our world in which automation is increasing in the workplace. Maybe not rapidly in the Bahamas, not yet. Not yet, but you know how we go. We always say whatever happening in the world, you know, before Bahamas catch on, even though we always also say Bahamas so behind, right? But automation, meaning companies are getting robots, machines to do what people have been typically doing for them. There is an Oxford University study that says that up to 50% of jobs in the United States of America are at risk of automation. You hear what I say? 60% of jobs. 60% of jobs. That's huge. The U.S. labor force is about 165 million. 165 million. We have 140,000. And this report suggests that as much as 50% of jobs in the U.S. are at risk of automation, meaning that in due time, companies will be able to find machines, computers, to do those jobs. If you go online to some of these banks and some of these other institutions, not the Bahamas, but elsewhere, you will find that you are chatting with some machine. And at a certain point, the machine might say, okay, let me get you a live somebody to talk to. You say automation ain't replacing nobody, but let me ask you a question. How many of you calling workplaces right now and having some machine say to you, if you know your party's extension, please dial it now. Otherwise, stay on the call and wait for the instruction. If you want to dial one, that's automation. That's a machine. That used to be a human being. Hi, how are you? That not no more. In many places, some machine. You don't think the machines are going to replace people? Okay, stay right there. How about tellers? Remember when you only could get your money from a teller at the bank? Well, aren't they trying to shove you now in the direction of an ATM? Aren't you doing many more of your businesses online? Or automation, right? And so this notion that laborers, workers, live bodies would be replaced by machines or some automated system of function is very real in the world. And it is moving and moving ever more rapidly as time goes by. So I have a question for you. Do you know which area or areas in an economy are more likely to face automation? Meaning the likelihood of replacing workers with some automated system, some machine to do that job. Do you know which areas? Are you perhaps in an area where that is likely to be true? Do you know? Maybe if you're 50 like me plus, this is not a huge, huge query for you. Because for the most part, our productive years in terms of work, most of it is behind us. But if you are a millennial, if you are the generation after the millennials, you could face the issue of automation head on more than anybody else. Now, before you stop and think, oh, the Bahamas so backward, we'll never get there. Let me ask you a question. How much digitizing and digital working you think the Bahamas doing now after just 1 year of COVID-19? Anybody, send me a text. Remember when we used to talk about the Bahamas so backward, nobody could do anything digitally? How many are doing so now? After 1 year, how many businesses are operating digitally now where they hadn't had an inkling of a notion of doing so? Say, ah, yes, customer-facing areas, assembly of parts, etc. Yes, those are definitely among the areas that are going to be up for automation. Is anybody else? I'm waiting for you, but I'm asking you, we couldn't conceive of the Bahamas being as digital as it was, as it is now, could we? But look at us now. You doing more payment online, more ordering online, more actual doing the work from home remotely online than ever in history. We learned it online. We was thinking about these things on the fringes of our ordinary life, but that's not what's happening now. Same thing could happen and will happen with automation. There could be things that accelerate the process, even in slow places like the Bahamas, we like to say of ourselves. because something happens that says do this or die. So what areas are likely to be the subject of automation? Let me tell you what is the easiest way of knowing, and my texter alluded to it. Anything that is repetitive, and by repetitive I mean like it can be done the same way all the time without any special skill, is open to automation, anything. So if your role in a company is to take this screw and put it in that socket, and that's all you do, put this screw in that socket. If there's a machine that can put this screw in that socket, that's it, you're done. Well, I'm not saying, I'm saying your job is subject to automation. If your job is, hi, how are you? Yes, hold on, please, I will give you that extension. If that's your job, a machine can do that job. Let me tell you how sophisticated the voicing machines are getting. Do you all know Stephen Hawking? One of the great minds, scientific minds of human history. Certainly one of the top five scientific minds of human history. He's a cosmologist. He was a cosmologist. He, during his PhD studies, took ill, and they discovered that he had a deadly disease. One that they thought surely he would die from in 2 years. He did not die in 2 years. He dedicated himself to understanding how the cosmos worked. And he, over time, he became so debilitated. He couldn't move his mouth. He couldn't move much of his body at all. Eventually, he had to find a machine that could speak for him. And do you all know that that machine was created by two Indians? Yeah, two Indians. He had visited India. And they took on this assignment of giving him a way to speak. You know that when he spoke through the machine, that he essentially had a kind of a machine voice. You know, it sounded like, mang, mang, mang. I am Stephen Hawking, and I want you to know. That was the way he spoke. Do you know that he spoke that way not because he had to? They had been able to give him a voice that was there, his actual voice, when he could speak. But he had become so accustomed to that voice that that was the voice he used. He preferred it. But notice Stephen Hawking could give lectures. He could give speeches. He could communicate in interviews with that voice that was computer enabled. That's where computers and automation going is my point. So it is conceivable that you can pick up a phone and you can hear someone speak to you and they might sound just like someone you know down the road. Look at now when you'd use these GPS systems. You could use it in American English. You could use it in British, in United Kingdom English. You could use it in all kinds of languages. You can get the voice to be a male or female. They can have some kind of attitude. So my point is, Don't say it that far off. Okay, so let's talk about some of the areas that are subject to automation. If it's repetitive, it's subject to automation. They believe that 50% of jobs in wholesale and retail trade will go to automation. 50% of jobs in the U.S., for instance, wholesale and retail trade. Why? Because what does that mean? What is the wholesale and retail doing? Delivering your packages to this one, the next one, and the next one, and so forth and so forth. Look at Amazon. In China, they have a whole store that's entirely automated. Right? So wholesale and retail trade. Transportation. In the United States of America today, they have vehicles that are self-driven. And the first one was tested on a drive from California to Florida. No man in the car, because they believe that these automated self-driven vehicles are able to avoid accidents unlike humans can, because they don't get tired. They aren't going to make some error because they texting on the phone. even though one of them did get in an accident and now there's a lawsuit involved. So transportation, agriculture, they'll be able to have machines, plow the land, measure out the ingredients required to fertilize the soil and so forth and so forth and so forth. I went to a poultry operation in Canada when I was setting up my poultry operation. Listen to me, folks. This is a God honest truth. When I went to the farm, the owner met me. I looked around this farm and I'm looking for workers. I am looking for workers. I'm looking to see, you know, because on my operation, you know, I walked on the place and I could see people. When he and I sat down, I said, you know, I noticed that there's no people. He says, the only time more persons than myself are on this farm is when I am processing birds, on the day I am, or days I'm processing birds. He said, I run this entire operation outside of processing days by myself. I feed the chicks by myself. I hatch my birds by myself. And he showed me his setup, all the buttons. He could be in his office, pressing this, pressing that, pressing the next day. I'm telling you, folks, it was an amazing thing to do. He made his own feed and had no workers for those kinds of things. It was incredible, all right? Agriculture. Manufacturing. If you are in the business of putting things together, as long as they could find a machine to put it together, they can automate it and therefore need less workers to do that. So manufacturing is one of them. And listen to this. Listen to this one. Up to 70% of jobs, they believe, in the accommodations and food area. Now listen, that's hotels and restaurants. Hotels and restaurants, accommodations and food is subject to automation. Most of our people in the Bahamas are employed in the accommodations and food area. At least a great deal of them. So those are some of the areas where automation is possible to put jobs at risk. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue looking at areas where automation is less likely to put jobs at risk. We'll be back after this break. You're listening to Z Live.
Self-quarantine helps to prevent the spread of COVID-19 and keeps our community safe. An individual may be asked to self-quarantine if they had close contact with a person who tested positive for COVID-19. Self-quarantine involves not leaving your home, staying at home in one room by yourself, using a separate bathroom from others in the household, avoiding contact with others, including those in your household, practicing preventative measures such as hand washing and disinfecting, monitoring for changes in your health, answering the phone when the contact tracing team calls, and following instructions given by healthcare professionals. Let's do our part to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
This message has been brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health, in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
You work hard. Shouldn't your money be working hard too? RF Mutual Funds are designed to put your money to work with some of the best performing investment funds in the market and a range of funds to suit your unique needs and risk tolerance. So when you're hard at work, you can be confident your money is too. Put your money to work with RF Mutual Funds. Call us at 603-6000 or visit rfgroup.com to learn more. RF, money at work.
Sourdough King is back at Burger King Nassau. This fan favorite features 2 quarter-pound savory flame-grilled beef patties topped with thick-cut smoked bacon, 4 slices of melted American cheese, ketchup, and creamy mayonnaise, all on toasted sourdough slices. Get your sourdough sandwich as a single or a double and add ice-cold Pepsi and fries or onion rings for a perfect way to fill your day. The flame-grilled Sourdough King is only here for a limited time and only available at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Chad, Johnny Moe's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pulled my phone out, pulled up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep, sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of...
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Just let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Chicago Line, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon, the eve of Labor Day. So glad you could join us. If you want to call, please feel free to do so on 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316 or 325-4259, 325-4259. You can text on 422-4796 or WhatsApp on 439-3043. So we're talking labor. We talked about the areas most fit for automation. Just remember, if it's a routine, something that can be done repetitively the same way over and over again, it is one of those things most ready for automation. But what are the areas, what are the jobs least likely to be automated? What are those jobs least likely to be automated? All right, here's the list. Find out, are you in one of them? I'll give you the general rule of some part of this later. So jobs least likely to be automated, least likely to be done by machines or computers or something of that nature, not humans. First, healthcare workers. Healthcare workers, a nurse, and those kinds of people, least likely to be done by a machine. Healthcare workers, a lot of them, the doctors for the most part, they may have some part of their jobs automated, but just because they're using some machines doesn't necessarily mean that you ain't gonna have a doctor there who has to make decisions about, oh, what happens in the event that vessel ruptures and so forth during surgery, right? And to be able to respond and react to it. Teachers, you ain't gonna automate them. You could have a machine teach you some things, but you are not going to automate teachers. In particular, the suggestion is high school teachers are least likely to be automated, all right? Well, you know, these are, well, you'll see the general rule as we go along. So teachers are not highly likely to be automated. If you are in any of what they call the creatives, the creative areas, like if you're a writer, a graphic designer, an artist, et cetera, you may use machine in your craft, but your creativity is a very human construct and you are least likely to be automated, right? Social workers. People who have to reach out and help people in their times of need, least likely to be automated. You ain't got no machine job. So you out of a job, oh, you need rental assistance, et cetera. No, not no machines can do that. And counselors for such people are least likely. Lawyers, not likely to be automated. You may have some legal functions that can be automated, and we see some of that to the extent that they now have these standard affidavits, standard contracts, et cetera, but no, the lawyers ain't going nowhere. You got to have a lawyer go in court with you, so forth and so forth. So lawyers are not likely to be automated. supervisors or managers or leaders, right? The extent to which you have to have some oversight of, because even the machines could break down, the machines can malfunction, the machines can deteriorate. Somebody has to be there to oversee all that. So supervisors, leaders, managers, not likely to be automated. How about computer systems analysts? Well, if the computer is what now doing the work, there got to be some creator, got to be some analyst, got to be someone overlooking all of that. So they're not likely to be automated. Auto body repair. If you're a mechanic, a body mechanic, yeah, it's very unlikely that you're going to be automated. Yeah, the machines may make the car, but when the car get broken down, they ain't got no machines knocking out that dent or looking at how to repair that, this, that, and the next thing. So they're not likely to be automated. Glass repairmen, not likely to be automated. You're going to probably always need a human being to do that. How about heavy equipment and mobile equipment service technicians? So if you're somebody who's servicing these heavy equipment, et cetera, and a machine could be replacing you necessarily, the word, the thought is, so your area is fairly robust in the face of automation. How about bus and truck mechanics? Again, in keeping, bus and truck mechanics, less likely to be automated. How about the line installers and workers? You know, the people who do the electrical lines on your poles and all that kind of stuff? Dang, ain't no way. You know, automation probably likely replacing them, so they are not up for much automation. How about occupational therapists? Not likely up for any kind of automation. You could add to that physical therapist too. I don't know the extent to which you can get too many robots able to deal with human muscles the way. Masseuse, maybe, even not subject to automation that way. Special education. You have kids who are challenged in their learning, etc. Chances are of a machine being able to deal with them and so forth. Mm-mm. So special educators, you seem to have a robust profession in light of possible automation. How about aerospace engineers? They're not likely to have them replaced by robots. How about nurse practitioners and nurses? Not likely to be replaced by any automation. Midwives, they ain't got no robot sitting in front there trying to deliver that baby. How many of you women to be laying down in that bed, having your baby, and some machine going, okay, now push? Ain't gonna happen. No. Writers and authors, I mentioned before, they are part of the creatives, not likely. Historians. Someone has texted saying, policemen. I agree with you in large measure, but you know, you could argue some part of policing could be automated, but I agree with you. Here is what the general rule and guide. It doesn't always work. I'm just saying it's a general rule and guide for what is least likely to be automated. If something requires intense interaction between human beings, intense, the kind of interaction that requires analytical, evaluative, diagnostic, empathetic, emotional responsiveness, they are not likely to be subject to automation because you're not going to get machines that are quite capable of doing that, even though there is a project. Listen to me. There is a project right now being undertaken. It was being undertaken for almost a decade or so now. It's taking place in Switzerland, and it is reverse engineering the brain. And so what is it doing? They are creating a computer that is a representation of the human brain through reverse engineering. You know, the Japanese used to use reverse engineering to mimic what innovations, creations the U.S. made. So they would take a U.S. device, and all you do is you break it down step by step. So you move the cover, so you know you need a cover. And then when you move the cover, you look inside and you see what next needs to move. And all you do is you document all the parts and how they're tied together. And once you get all of that, you can put your own together and boom, you have the device. So it was reverse engineering. So what they're trying to do with the human brain is, so, okay, we pretty much have mapped out the human brain now, so, and how it works. And so they are creating all these network of lines and what have you to mimic the human brain. So here is the scary part of it. This is the scary part of it. The fellow who is leading this charge said, we don't know if when we have finished creating this replica of the human brain, if it will have consciousness. We don't know. Might it have a mind? Might it have emotions? He said, we don't know. Okay? But the general rule is if you have to interact with human beings in an intense way, so you're not likely to be subject to automation. So like the occupational therapists, the special education people, the nurses and doctors and teachers and those kinds of things. So if you don't like people, and so you decide you want to be away from people doing more mechanical things and so forth and so forth, well, you are making a choice about the evolving world in which we live, come work. Why would I talk to you about this on Labor Day and depress you all? I'm not trying to depress you. I'm trying to say something that is being said all around the world. The world is changing. The world is evolving. The job requirements are changing. The skill set in the workplace, changing. And enlightened workers, enlightened laborers, enlightened workers, laborers, unions, enlightened associations of workers have to understand those evolving changes and ready and prepare themselves for that evolution. So that if you are a union today, if you are a parent today, if you are an employer today, if you are a counselor today, you and I, we have got to be saying some things to our folk. If you are a worker today, you have got to be understanding some things for yourself. And you've got to be, especially if you have young people who are just now beginning their lives in the adult world and in the world of work and so forth, you've got to be trying to help them come to understand what kind of world is evolving and what kind of skill sets will make them more resilient in that world. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to talk about some of those skill sets that will make you more resilient, more robust in the evolving world of work. We'll be back after this break. You're listening to Z Live.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.
The purpose of contact tracing for COVID-19 is to help contain and prevent the spread of the disease. Contact tracing starts when a person has tested positive for COVID-19. This individual is asked to identify who they have been around or with whom they had physical contact. Once identified, these persons are informed that they have been in contact with someone who tested positive for COVID-19. They are not told who the person is to protect patient confidentiality. They are then instructed to quarantine for 14 days from the last contact with the case because it can take up to 14 days for symptoms to show up after exposure. During the 14 days, these individuals are assessed daily by a member of the contact tracing team for any symptoms that may develop. Self-quarantine involves staying at home, practicing physical distancing while at home, monitoring oneself for symptoms, and reporting accurately to health professionals daily.
This message has been brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on for these remaining moments of the show where we have been talking about labor in the face of upcoming Labor Day. And I hope you enjoy your Labor Day. You can't march, maybe, as we would have some time ago. But, you can still celebrate labor. And celebrate it, eat some fritter, some conch, salad, enjoy your Labor Day. So I gave you some of the automation prone areas of work, and I gave you some of the automation resistant areas of work, and I indicated that the reason I'm doing this is really to say to all and sundry, fear, F-E-A-R, paralyzes, but knowledge empowers. So anyone who only emphasizes that which may make you fearful has no respect for your liberty, because fear enslaves. Knowledge empowers. And so when you are more knowledgeable and aware, you can adapt, you can adjust, you can do the necessary to make it. And so if you're a worker, if you're somebody coming into the workplace or workspace, here is really what you ought to be thinking about. Okay, you ought to be asking yourself, what are the most transferable skills that I could have? What do I mean by that? What skill, no matter what area of work it is something that if I have would make me valuable in that area? So it's a transferable skill. And so what the persons who are studying these areas are saying to us is, if you are going to be adaptable in a rapidly changing world, because that's what the issue is being able to adapt, not be scared, but to adjust, to adapt to a world that's changing, there are some skills that you need to adopt. And these skills include creativity, right? Creativity, actually, I used to think that creativity was a natural trait that some people had above others, but actually creativity can be taught. You can train yourself to be more creative. It's a question of pressing your mind forcing yourself to see things differently. For instance, typically when we wake up, the sky is blue. Right? That's what we say. But by pressing your imagination, imagine a purple sky. Imagine a green sky. Imagine a black sky. And if you imagine a black sky, guess what you end up with? Night. Right? So you try to see things differently. Most televisions are square rectangular. What if there was an oval television? What would that look like? Okay, and so that's the issue. Most globes are spherical like the Earth. But what if there was a cubed globe? And there are. So the idea is to be able to say to yourself, can I imagine a thing, a person, a world differently? Because it is in that imagination that you are valuable to the workplace, because now you get to say, on a job, that could be done differently and probably more efficiently or effectively. But a person who just goes in and accepts what is and keeps it the way it is and never questions it, never think about it differently, cannot be creative that way. And we can learn to be creative. The Economist, I think it was, has had one of their publications dedicated to creativity, talking about ways in which we can increase our creativity. So you can do it. Don't let anybody fool you. And if you're a parent or a guardian, you can help your children be more creative by not stifling their ability to see things differently. They may say, but that could be like this. And you might know or believe it can't be done that way. But ask them why. Why do you think it could be done that way? And if it's not dangerous, can we explore it? Like my mother taught me how to cook. Wonderful cook my mother is, etc. But My mother taught me how to cut certain things the same way and do certain things the same way. But over time, I evolved some ways to do it differently. I don't say better, because ultimately I want the flavor, the nutrients, and the nutritious to be the same or better, but just differently. And so my point is, you can imagine different ways of doing things. That's creativity. Creativity is a transferable skill. Emotional intelligence is a transferable skill. Now, here's what is important about emotional intelligence. Listen to me, folks. If you're a worker who wants to be adaptable, listen to me. According to the research, as much as 85% of success in life and in the workplace is attributed to not academic intelligence, but emotional intelligence. What is emotional intelligence? Emotional intelligence is your ability to deal with yourself, to manage yourself properly so that you are a healthier self, a more, you know, well-adjusted self and so forth, and to deal with other people properly and interacting with them in ways that are at worst, not harmful, at best, helpful, right? And so emotional intelligence, because we oftentimes have to work in environments where we're working in people, a highly emotional, intelligent person is a valuable person in a workplace and is a valuable person in any workplace. And so that's a transferable skill. So creativity, emotional intelligence. The STEM proficiencies, science, technology, engineering, and math, science permeates almost everything. Technology permeates almost everything. Engineering permeates almost everything. Math permeates almost everything. You have those skills, and you are a transferable soul across the economic spectrum. Right? Sometimes the environment in which you exist may be challenged to be able to furnish you at that point, but that's different than being able to move from one area to a next area to a next area because you have a skill that can be valuable in so many areas, right? The dignity of work is only realized by those who can find work, right? Whether that's paid or unpaid. But in our capitalist societies, more often than not, we're looking for paid work. But so you can only be dignified and work when you can find work. And the people, the work environment is constantly changing. And so just because you have a skill today that's valuable doesn't mean that tomorrow it will be as valuable. And so you have to be able to adapt. For instance, you have some musicians who used to work in the hotels doing live bands or and what have you. They had jobs and work in the 70s and maybe the early 80s. Now those same people find life less so. But the ones who have been able to take their craft and move it into engineering or producing or that kind of thing, maybe they're faring a little better or more, or much better than those who still are looking for, I want somebody to hire me to do live entertainment. So it does matter that you are constantly developing as a person and allowing yourself to be adaptable in a world that's constantly changing. And when it's like that, you can almost say that the probability of being unemployed for you is very low. Now, you may not always make the amount of money you used to make or wish to make, but that you will be able to make money is, for that soul, almost guaranteed. This text says, good day, Mr. Lang. This is a great show today. We might recognize labor tomorrow. When will we recognize productivity? This might be a harsh statement about labor, but I'm glad that some jobs are being automated. Machines don't take strike and complain. There is a serious deficit of productivity in the public sector. Moreover, there is an even bigger issue to hold the government workers accountable when it comes to acceptable output. I suppose I should have added to that list government jobs. Even if they get automated, you ain't gonna lose them. not typically. They tend to be very robust, certainly more robust, especially on the permanent, unpensionable establishment. Maybe not when the government changes and your party give you a contract, and then the new party come in and they don't keep you. You can't get mad too much because how'd you get the job? My party was in. Okie dokie. Sometimes it works like that. But on the permanent version of the establishment, tends to be much more robust. Anyway, listen, y'all enjoy your holiday tomorrow, and God bless you. Nahaja Black is up next. We'll talk to you again next week. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shabaga Lang, your host.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody.